Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Cool, so we've got Steve Todd here. He's the technical director at Mashbow. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Steve.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and thanks for being patient with us as well. Now and again, we have these issues. I think maybe it's a northern thing, we like to complain about how busy we are. Also, if we weren't busy, we'd complain about how bored we are as well.
You can never have it both ways, but... complain either way.
Yeah, well, we've got nothing else to talk about otherwise, have we? How boring are the people who are just happy all the time?
Yeah, well, it's that or the weather, which is pretty much what we've just done.
What we've covered, yeah. You can't help it. You hear the accent and then all of a sudden it's like, right, let's moan to each other. Like, it's just a natural northern thing to do. I don't know why. But anyway. Steve, pleasure to have you here, mate. For context as well, wouldn't mind getting a bit of a kind of introduction if you'd kind of give everyone a bit of context on kind of your background, experiences, and what's happening over at Mashbow at the moment.
Yeah, so Mashbow is a software consultancy based in Liverpool. I set it up in 2011 with two other guys who both worked at a fairly large web development agency based in Liverpool as well. We did that because we didn't like the working culture within the company, and that drove us to leave that company essentially at different points within our careers. We got back together to start a piece of software that was based around charitable donations that used a model like Quidco, where you'd go online, you'd make a purchase through Quidco, and then you'd get a kickback from that purchase. And we were basically making this model where via that purchase, the kickback that you'd get would be a charitable donation to a chosen charity. So that's how Mashbow came about originally. We were a product business. And in order to fund, buy the beans on toast, we had to do something else. So we had to build people's websites for them on the side. That took off more than the product did, because we didn't really have the experience of taking a startup project through to fruition back in 2011. So the emphasis was more on project work for clients after that. And it turns out that it was a really good idea, the product idea, because Amazon have done it. So if you go to smile.amazon.co.uk, they do exactly what we were setting up to do. It was just we didn't have the resources to do it at the time. So over the years, we've worked on projects, primarily the bespoke software, web applications built in PHP for back-end and JavaScript for the front-end. So we usually use Ember framework for that as well. It's basically just taken off from there.
Awesome, mate. Sounds so cool. I mean, and obviously I think such a kind of prosperous place as well. I know obviously Liverpool, like Manchester, is really becoming quite the kind of tech hub as well. So it's an exciting kind of time and area to be kind of building a project like this.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's loads of things happening in the region. And the startup culture is really what we've landed ourselves in over the last 2 to 3 years. Because it's an exciting space. You get to work on cutting edge technologies and see what you can make. I mean, our motto is build things people use, and that's what we try and do every day. And within that startup culture, you get to see what new things people can use and see how they will use it. So you don't need to know how they're going to use it. They usually surprise you, which is another cool thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. it's a massively like positive and I think inspiring environment. You know, I've been done it myself, but not in the north in California and in London. And it's a great inspiring environment to be in, to be around like other startups. The one thing, like, I suppose if there was a negative thing about it, is that sometimes you can end up in a bit of a bubble. So I think it was really important that you mentioned, you know, to, you know, build things that people actually want, because you can be in these environments where it's incredibly innovative. You know, there's all these amazing kind of, you know, attention grabbing projects happening. But at the end of the day, the ones that are successful are the ones that people actually want to use. And I think that the nice thing for me about the North is that, like, it's kind of got a nice mixture of both. You kind of get just, you know, what normal everyday people want who are in business. And then also, like, you kind of get a bit of an insight into, you know, the kind of, I suppose, attention grabbing, exciting tech as well. So it's kind of a nice balance for me. And I think it kind of keeps you grounded and, you know, it ensures that you can remain kind of customer centric for the masses as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's our core focus, is making sure that the things that we build, they, you know, are enjoyable to use. And we always come back to that question, like, are the people using it? Will they use it? If we, you know, if we've got this new feature and we deploy it, will people actually use it? Mm. And we're always asking for that feedback, because you might deploy something, you might think, great, this, you know, this new feature everyone's going to love, and then you find out that it's subtly wrong. That's, you know, that's one way that you can develop, is you deploy fast and fail fast as well at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So where did you kind of, you know, obviously prior to starting this, you know, was the influences that you or experiences that you'd had that sort of made you motivated to start to build Mashbow in a kind of particular kind of way, or, you know, like trying to encourage a certain kind of culture? Like, just curious about whether you've ever gained kind of perspective on that and thought about why you kind of have purposely started to build it in the way that you have.
Well, yeah, it was a bit of a strange one, because my whole career path was wanting to be a pilot. So I was doing everything in order to become a pilot. And then when I was about 16, 17, going into A-levels and then thinking about university, found out about computers, found out that you can program them to do whatever you want. And then that, you know, I caught that bug.
Mm.
And it basically stemmed from there, really. So went to uni and did computer science there, and found out way more about the real complexities of programming and how computers work and how they can all connect together. It was really, that was the seed. And just being around other tech-minded people, there is a certain like character to those people. It, you know, breeds a nice working environment where all you want to do is, you know, make cool tech together.
Mm.
And that, you know, that kind of breeds the nice environment that you get in tech companies like ours.
And how did you like, say you talk about the kind of the nice environment that you kind of built, how was hiring, you know, specifically in Liverpool? Did you find that the talent, there is kind of a, you know, a lot of available talent, or was it more of a struggle because you were outside of London, etc.? Like, how have you found that kind of process?
It's definitely a struggle. There is talent in Liverpool, but then there are quite a few large companies in Liverpool as well that are vying for this talent. And yeah, people are attracted to London. It's trying to change that shift back up to the north and, you know, make it more balanced. Because obviously, if you're up north, you can't afford the salaries that people are expecting to be on in the south, and now people do remote working. So it complicates the landscape of recruiting someone, because they might still want to remain in, say, London and remain on those salaries, even though they're working for a northern company. So it's become a real interesting problem. Sadly, it's in the developer's favour at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I didn't really think about like remote working to have that kind of a cause that kind of a problem, but actually you think about it and it kind of does even the playing field from what their expectations are from a kind of salary perspective, doesn't it? I didn't really think ever thought about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting one though, isn't it? And I suppose it can be because it's supposed to be like a positive thing, but again it's positive thing from the developer's perspective. And you know, it also makes it difficult for things like you mentioned about having a great culture and building a good team, is that, you know, when you do have like a shortage in talent, it probably makes it more difficult to hire the people that you really would want to, who tick all the boxes, perhaps like from a cultural perspective as well. Do you find that's like a difficult thing to stay disciplined on, when it's like, here's someone who could actually probably do the job and it's difficult to find, but they just don't seem like the type of cultural fit? Is that something that, you know, you still have to kind of stick to your guns on?
Yeah, so the culture fit is huge when we employ someone. But like you say, when you're back slightly against the wall and you've got, say, two or three candidates that can do the job, your choice is limited. So you then saying which is the best fit rather than which is the one that we really want. Sometimes we've been lucky. The team that we've managed to hire over the last 8 years have everyone's fitted in really nicely, and you know we've essentially landed on our feet when we've employed people with the people that we've got. They fit the culture perfectly. But yeah, like you say, when you're getting into the realms of remote workers, the culture aspect, it changes, because you're not with them every day. You know, you're not with them 8 hours of every day, in their face and talking to them. It's a lot more hands-off type of relationship. So the culture bit doesn't really come into it. As long as they can do the job, that then becomes the motivating driver to employ them.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Do you think there is still a kind of culture though with remote working, or do you think that it's, you know, it really is just a difficult one? Do you still think there's a lot of value in, you know, brick and mortar and having people like on site, you know? Do you think that that's... Which way would you kind of lean towards? And do you think we've got kind of a culture with remote working?
Yeah, I think we've definitely got a future with remote working. I personally like coming in to, you know, a bricks and mortar building, having an office space with knowing that there's going to be other people there.
Mm.
But what we do here is we allow... the choice. So we've got the office and we have the choice to remote work whenever you like. So it's, you know, it's the best of both worlds really. Cause I sometimes do just want to, you know, have my own headspace, get the washing done at home is what usually is what I do. If you've got to take your car in, or you've got a dentist appointment, or you've got to stay in for a parcel, you know, those types of things, it's easy to just say, right, I'm working from home, and we're completely set up to do that. We're, you know, all our infrastructure allows us to work wherever our laptop is. So in that sense, it's great. And you find that with the people who work here, they very rarely work from home. They might work from home on a Friday occasionally, or a Monday. So they have, you know, it feels like a 3 or 4 day weekend.
Mm.
And that works perfectly for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So you feel like you kind of had to is there an element that you kind of had to kind of, you know, adjust things in order to kind of acquire the talent as well? Is there a little bit of kind of give and take there?
Yeah, well, we always, you know, it's an open office here, and we talk about these things with everyone in there. It's basically just come about from discussions within the team, like how would we work better? How would working at Mashbo be better for the people who work here? And they come up with the ideas, and they just put these proposals to us, and we then discuss them and decide on them. And one of them was allow for remote working. It's, you know, as far as we've implemented, it's worked perfectly.
Yeah, it is an interesting topic. I think one that for some reason has like a certain relevancy as well to the north. I just think it's obviously going to be there. But I think that the way things are going, though, it should become better and better to acquire great talent. We've seen such a shift up north, and Manchester's really kind of flourishing and been a beneficiary of some of the bigger businesses and whatever. And I think, you know, the bigger businesses, yeah, they kind of do take up some of the talent and the market, but also they do bring, you know, people to those areas as well. So there is, I think there's positive and negatives to that, isn't there?
Definitely, yeah. The bigger businesses are seeing the benefit of moving up north. And like you say, that's dragging people back from London up to Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, which is great. That then just means that we've got more people to choose from.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting. I think it's great. And I think what happens is people come up here, you know, enjoy the lifestyle a lot. And then, like they say, they want to stay. They might come up with a big business, but then, you know, they'll be like, right, I want to move on, but I don't want to leave. And I think that happens. And then that over time, you know, it accumulates, and all of a sudden you've got an exciting talent pool emerging. Yeah. And I think that's what we're seeing now. So it's great.
Yeah, that's it. And as more emphasis is being put onto tech in, you know, in junior school, senior school, all the way through to the unis, so you'll start to see even more talent come through. So there's a huge amount of, you know, male programmers at the moment, and not so many females, and you can start to see that it's becoming more and more balanced in that area as well. So you know, you've got even more people to choose from who are going to be amazing at the job.
Absolutely. Technically then, for you guys as well, you know, how obviously 8 years up and running now. It sounds like, you know, you stuck to kind of the core PHP backend, you know, JavaScript front end, and, you know, but even within the 8 years, has there been kind of a demand shift in like the kind of tech that people want you to build, or the languages that they like have a preference in what you want to develop, and have you yourselves kind of taken it upon yourselves to kind of work with different technologies in over that kind of period of time?
Yeah, so our passion was to build products. That was our original passion when we started Mashbo. And like I said at the start, we had to go into the project based work, which that revolved around, you know, CMSs and building brochure websites and e-commerce platforms on Magento or things like that. And we've slowly seen the progression from people wanting just a plain old website to something that does a little bit more for their business. You can go to Wix or, you know, website builder, website applications, and build your own website now for, you know, £5 a month. And they're pretty decent nowadays. You can build a shop with Shopify, and it's decent. You know, the themes that you can get are really good, on mobile through to desktop. So those types of jobs are slowly disappearing, mm-hmm. and it's more to do with businesses who are looking to grow and want to automate certain processes within that business. And that's what we then want to build is, you know, that bespoke software that drives that efficiency. Hopefully for us, for our own product one day, but at the moment we tend to build bespoke software for clients. So it's still project work. It's just the type of work has changed a lot over the last 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, interesting. What's the kind of been the demand shift then, to go into a bit more detail about, you know, what the kind of, you know, maybe about from that perspective, obviously, you know, you mentioned, you know, brochure websites, e-commerce websites. What is it now? Is it more like applications and things like that?
Yeah, so it's essentially like a web application that will drive part of their company. So it might be, we've got an example that we can talk about is Property Cloud. Mm-hmm. So this came about from a discussion with three estate agents, student lettings agents. And they came in and they had a piece of software that they built 20 years ago and it wasn't online. So they all had to go into the office in order to work because it was on a central server in the office. And the functionality of it wasn't that great because it didn't record everything that they needed to record. It didn't generate reports that they needed. The landlords, tenants, guarantor, contractors, they all didn't have sight of all this information. So if they needed any of the information, they had to phone the office. So there was a load of different aspects of that business that could be more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And there was jobs that they really didn't need to do because if the relevant users of, you know, the relevant people within that ecosystem, if they had access to their own information, they wouldn't have to go to the agent and ask for it.
Mm.
So that's how Property Cloud came about. There are other software out there that, you know, they're competitors to us, like Arthur Online, Renter, LetMC, things like that. So they do similar things. It's just they don't do the student market very well. Because when you think about a student, they don't have a regular income. And they get paid with a student loan once every, say, quarter or every 4 months, something like that. So they want to be able to have their payment schedules configured based on that.
Mm.
And a lot of other systems don't allow that. So they're setting this rigid monthly payment schedule. Mm-hmm. And they don't like it because they'll spend all the money when they receive it unless they can, you know, send it off to the agent or the landlord.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that we were having to overcome. And that's, you know, that, like I was saying before, that's built in PHP. And we use a JavaScript Ember framework front end.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, it's interesting. Really interesting. And do you think that if you were to predict a trend, so to speak, it's a very open-ended question, I suppose, but if you were to predict a trend for what you think the demand is going to come from next, what would be kind of your assumption? Maybe in the next 5 years or something?
The demand is going to be on getting insights out of huge data sets. So it's essentially machine learning, AI, that kind of thing. So there's huge amounts of data out there that we as humans just can't find the patterns in that data, but with machine learning you can. That's becoming more and more prevalent, and companies are now asking that for to help power their back end systems, make the companies more efficient. And it could be really simple things like, when should I send a tenant a reminder email for their rent?
Mm.
If you send them all out at 10 o'clock, you might get a 10% engagement rate. Now, if you then say, well, we've analyzed all of these tenants and these types of tenants engage better to emails and text at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, then we'll send their emails out at 2. You might then get an engagement rate of 40%. So, you've increased that by 30% then. So it's those types of efficiencies that you're looking for, and you just can't do that without churning through all that data, and machine learning, AI algorithms, they all help you do that. And I think that's the next big thing that's going to have an explosion over the next 5 years.
Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, mate. We'll leave it there on that point. So thank you so much for taking the time, mate. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah, thanks for the time.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.